there would be scores of casualties. Hobbs cleared her throat as the last tendrils of the event loosened their grip, interrupting the officer's consideration of the tenuous technologies that stood between them and sudden disaster. Are we certain that all these black bodies are the same? Perhaps those that fired on the master pilot aren't representative of the whole, she said. Floating in the command bridge airscreen were the images recorded by Master Pilot Marx's remote scout. The first time the Lynx's officers had watched the destruction of the huge receiver array, they'd cheered. But now the image was paused, the wild storm of sand frozen halfway in its march across the dish. In this single frame, the reflected light of the Legia's sun was caught in the dying array. Against the bright backdrop, the ranks of blackbody monitors were clearly evident. Data analysis had counted 473 of them and had extrapolated another 49. That made 522. 2 to the 9th power. A typical Rix complement. But not for monitor drones. For the powerful slug throwers, it was far more than expected. The Lynx had been unknowingly hurtling toward a grinder. As near as we can tell, the blackbody shapes are the same throughout the complement, Ensign Tyre said softly. Hobbs realized that this was Tyre's first time on the command bridge. The ensign was the ranking data analyst now, Data Master Cax having been blinded in the flocker attack. Tyre was speaking in a slow and careful voice, almost timidly, but she had so far answered every question clearly. This hump on the dorsal side is the ammo supply, Tyre continued, windowing an individual blackbody drone. If any of these drones were fitted for minesweeping or decoy work, that hump would be absent. And they've all got it, Hobbs finished flatly. Before the meeting, the XO had gone through Marx's data frame by frame with Tyre. Hobbs had gotten all too clear a look at the drones that had finally killed Marx's scout. The deluge of their slugs had passed through the spreading sand cloud, the usually invisible shells illuminated by the medium. Expert software's careful count had revealed a firing rate greater than 100 rounds per second. The blackbody drones were loaded for bear. In the first Rix incursion, this class of drone had been used strictly for close-in defense. A few dozen of the monitors would float in front of a Rix warship, picking off attacking drones if they grew too close. But the blackbodies of the previous war were far fewer, and had possessed much lower firing rates. They were designed to kill drones. But these new monitors, in huge numbers and at short range, would also be capable of gutting the Lynx or anything else that tried to close with the battlecruiser. The Rix had configured for defense of their huge receiver at all costs, even anticipating ramming by a ship as large as a frigate. The sort of attack the Lynx had been headed for would surely have failed. If it hadn't been for Marx's skill and dumb luck, a dead sandcaster drone penetrating the perimeter intact, the receiver array would still be functional now and the Lynx on its unknowing way to destruction. No sense in discussing the drones, Captain Zai said. The die is cast. Hobbs nodded. The moment Captain Zai had seen Tyre's report, he had ordered the Lynx into high acceleration, pushing at 90-degree angle from the Rix warship's approach. In doing so, he had abandoned any chance of recovering the detached energy sink manifold. To escape the black bodies, the frigate had been forced to leave behind its primary defense against energy weapons. Now they had to get as far away from the battlecruiser as possible. Give us the real-time view, the captain ordered. The airscreen switched to the current transluminal returns from the Rix battlecruiser. Its main engine had swung 90 degrees, pursuing the Lynx now rather than braking to match Legia's 15, letting the blackbody drones drift on. Fortunately, the larger battlecruiser was the slower ship. It could make no more than 6 G's. Hobbs regarded the airscreen. The Lynx was pushing hard to put distance between herself and the battlecruiser, also headed perpendicular to the original Rix line of approach. They would have 19 minutes of acceleration under their belts before they reached their closest passage by the Rix warship. The math was easy. 1900 seconds at 12 G's advantage and a minute of float. 220,000 kilometers of breathing room. The blackbody monitors couldn't touch them out here. Intended to be absolutely silent, they had no drives. The Rix had effectively abandoned them. But the battlecruiser's chaotic gravity weapons had a much greater range, and without an energy sink manifold to shunt the energy into space, the Lynx was terribly vulnerable. The flag bridge underwent another shudder, and the captain's cup of tea traveled across the table toward Hobbs, rattling as if carried by a ghost who badly needed a night of sleep. The apparition passed. At least she's not optimized for offense, the captain said. The officers nodded. The blackbody drones and their ammo supply must have taken up space normally reserved for offensive weapons. But it wouldn't take much to hurt the Imperial warship, and the Rix captain knew the Lynx had dumped its energy sink. The manifold was still glowing behind them, spreading like an exhausted supernova. They could be in turnaround, First Pilot Maradona suggested. With no receiver array, they can't contact the compound mind. Maybe they've given up. So why come after us? Tyre asked. They could be angling out of the system, Second Pilot Anderson argued. They'd want to swing away from Legis's orbital defenses. Hobbs shook her head at this wishful thinking. If they were abandoning the mission, they'd gather those drones first. But they came straight after us. They want our blood. Which is perhaps a sign of our success, Zai added. Their array is destroyed. They want the Lynx's carcass as a consolation prize. Hobbs sighed. Captain Zai had never been one to paint success in rosy terms. They might be buying time to fabricate another receiver array, Anderson said. They couldn't possibly, the first engineer interjected. The thing was 1,000 clicks across. It'd take months and megatons of spare matter. 10 minutes left, Zai said. The battlecruiser's gravity weapons would soon be in range. Perhaps this discussion of Rick's motivation can wait. His fingers moved and the real-time view shifted into the future, using current vectors to extrapolate the moment of closest passage. Very soon we'll have less than a light second between ourselves and a pair of terawatt chaotic gravity cannon, he said. Assuming she's mounting normal weapons, sir, Anderson said. So far we haven't seen the usual mix, certainly not of drones. The battlecruiser was outfitted for making contact with the compound mind and nothing else. Perhaps it wasn't equipped with offensive weapons at all. Let us assume the worst, Zai said. We've still got all four photon cannons, sir, second gunner Wilson said. They can do a fair amount of damage even at light seconds range. If we get the first shots in, we could disable... Captain Zai shook his head, cutting the man off. We're not firing at the Ricks, he said. Eyebrows raised across the room. We're running silent. Hobbs smiled to herself. The Lynx's officers had committed themselves to the captain's initial plan for so long, had been so ready to bring their attack to the battlecruiser at any cost, that they hadn't realized the obvious. With the receiver destroyed, the Lynx had completed its mission. Survival was again a priority. Shut everything down, Hobbs explained. No sensors, no weapons charged. Go to freefall conditions. Total silence. The only activity will be cold jets to keep ourselves aligned head-on with the Ricks, Captain Zai added. Without a heatsink manifold, our Z-axis profile is less than 200 meters across. We'll be a needle in a haystack. Head-on? Gunner Wilson whispered. You know, sir, the forward armor is reinforced for meteoroid collisions, depleted uranium and a micro-layer of neutronium. We could even take a hit and survive. Zai shook his head. We'll eject the forward armor. Wilson and the others recoiled. Hobbs had to sympathize. When the captain had first explained this idea to her, she was convinced he had finally cracked. Now that she thought about it, his plan made sense. But it still had a perversity about it that mere logic couldn't shake. First, the energy sink manifold, now their armor. For the second time in this battle, they were throwing away their defenses. The captain remained silent, as if enjoying the shock his pronouncement had created. So Hobbs again explained. That armor is reflective. If they search for us with wide-focus laser fire, they'll pick us up as a big red spot. We could paint it black, someone suggested after a moment's thought. Not under high acceleration and not in time, the first engineer said flatly. The logic of the captain's idea slowly settled over the room like some dermal drug sinking into the skin. No weapons, no defenses, just the blackness of space between the Lynx and the enemy. A high-stakes gamble. Hobbs saw the discomfort on the officers' faces as they struggled to accept the plan. They were safer running silent, it was undeniable, but they would be relinquishing control of their fate to luck alone. It offended their sensibilities. They were the crew of a warship, not passengers on some commercial shuttle. Hobbs decided to interrupt the frustration filling the room. She had to give them something to do. Perhaps we could fill the forward cargo compartments with some protection against chaotic gravitons. Do we have any heavy metals? Hobbs asked. After a moment, Marks nodded. The minesweeper fragmentation drones use depleted uranium. Not much, but it's something. And there's the shielding around the singularity generator. If we're running silent, we'll be shutting the hole down so we could move it forward. A little extra hull alloy between us and the Ricks couldn't hurt. Put a team together, Zai ordered. Start disassembling the shielding now. Get it moving the moment we cease acceleration. First Engineer Frick spoke up. How long do we have in freefall, sir? 100 seconds, Hobbs said. No more. The man shook his head. It wasn't enough time to move the massive shielding through the corridors of the battle-configured ship. The captain nodded. All right, we'll cut our engines earlier. I'll give you 3 minutes of zero-G before we come under fire. Engineer Frick smiled at Exo Hobbs in triumph. Hobbs shrugged her shoulders. If the captain's largesse kept the man happy, she was glad to play Scrooge. But it was still precious little time for an operation of that complexity. The engineers would still be putting the makeshift armor in place when the Ricks started hunting them. But at least the crew would be occupied. Better busy than hunkering down in the dark, waiting for a lance of gravitons to tear into them. Even the hardest work was better than doing nothing. First Engineer Watson Frick watched a universe disappear. The pocket cosmos behind the hull alloy shielding stuttered for a moment as its bonds were cut. The black hole at its core, which had strained since its creation against the fields that held it in the real universe, convulsed for an instant, then collapsed. Away it goes, Frick thought, off to somewhere else. A different reality now utterly unreachable. What a strange way to generate power, the first engineer wondered. Making pocket universes. The false realms formed whenever a starship big-banged its drive. How many other realities had humanity created with this process? And would there one day be other thinking beings inside them, in the small realities born of humanity's hubris? Then those making pocket universes of their own... Frick shook his head. There was no time for philosophical digression. In 500 seconds, the Lynx would come under fire. The singularity generator's shielding was needed at the front of the warship. 2 minutes until freefall, Frick shouted. Let's get this metal broken down. The crew, his best men and women, worked quickly, disassembling the huge armored plates as easily as if this process were among the standard drills, which it most certainly was not. Frick put his own hands in, running a controller down the starboard seam of the shielding. The controller sent out focused FM waves, a tight field that activated nanos buried throughout the armor. The nanos sprang to life and began breaking down the shielding into movable sections. Sweat slid into Frick's eyes as he moved the heavy controller in a careful line. Normally, the device would be lightened by its own easy gravity generator, but with the Lynx still running flat out, spot sources of gravitons were too dangerous. At 18 G's acceleration, the random fluxes coursing through the ship were already deadly. Frick remembered the arduous trip out to intercept the Ricks' ship a week under 10 G's. A few days in, he'd seen a line of bad gravity go through a rating's legs, one of the man's kneecaps shattering like a dropped saucer. Frick tried to keep the cut steady. Taking the shielding apart was easy, of course, but doing it the right way was tricky. The Lynx would need the singularity generator quickly back in one piece again on the other side of danger. The black hole powered the ship's photon cannon, artificial gravity, even life support. With the generator offline, the captain was running the batteries down just to give Frick these minutes for disassembly. The heavy plates across from Frick shifted as they were cut apart. Slow it up over there, he shouted. You want to be crushed? Save your final cuts until we hit freefall. The largest of the sections massed 5 tons. As the words left his mouth, a shudder went through the ship, a gravity ghost reminding them all that the ship's artificial G was a very shaky proposition. For a moment, there was a nervous silence as the ghost passed. Heat was building in the cramped space around the singularity generator. The nano's furious activity within the shielding walls had turned them red hot.
Environmental, environmental, Frick said.
We're on it, sir, came the response in his second hearing. A tepid wind blew across his face, hardly sufficient.
A little more?
He inquired.
We're on it, sir,
the woman repeated with maddening calm. Frick scowled and lowered his cutter. He had cut as far as he safely could in 1G. The heat was unbearable. He walked around the generator's perimeter, checking his crew's work. The giant sections loomed over him, seeming to hang by threads.
Fine, fine, stop there, he rasped. Wait for free fall.
Suddenly, a panicked cry came from just behind him.
Sir!
He spun on one heel to face the cry.
It's cracking, sir!
Frick's eyes scanned the wall of shielding next to the yelping crewman. A spiderweb of fissures appeared, spreading even as he watched. For a moment, he couldn't believe it. The specs for singularity shielding were the most demanding in the Navy. No captain wanted a black hole coming loose in the middle of battle, and they'd calculated these cuts to the micrometer. But something had gone wrong. Then Frick's eyes spotted the epicenter of the cracking. There was a small hole in the shielding, a centimeter across.
Godspite! He shouted. One of the flockers hit the generator!
Fissures spread from the tiny hole like too thin lake ice cracking underfoot. The hull alloy cried out, a screaming sound to wake the dead as it began to collapse.
Priority! Priority!
The engineer yelled, his hand whipping through the priority icon even as he invoked it.
Cut the engines and the gravity, Hobbs! I need zero G!
But the shielding was already falling, coming down on them. The metal howled as its own weight tore it from the generator. Frick grabbed the crewman who'd spotted the fissures by the collar and pulled, planting his feet against the grabby surface of the deck. For a moment, he merely yanked the man and himself off balance, but then the sudden bowel-clenching feel of freefall descended around them. The XO had heard. Frick threw the suddenly weightless man out of danger, the ensign spinning toward safety. But he had pushed too hard, he realized. The second law put Frick himself in motion, hurtling back under the shielding. His grabby boots left the floor and he found himself helpless in the air. The free piece of shielding floated inexorably toward him. The first law now. It retained momentum from when it had been falling. With the engines and artificial gravity cut, the shielding was weightless. But it was still massive. It floated slowly toward him, no faster than a feather falling, less than a meter away. Frick's hands clawed at the deck behind him, but the metal slipped under his fingers. Why wasn't he wearing grabby gloves? There simply hadn't been time to suit up properly as he'd rushed to prepare this operation. No gloves! Frick had demoted ratings for this sort of idiocy. Well, justice would be served. The first engineer was about to be worse than demoted. The shielding moved toward him as slow and buoyant as some huge watercraft gliding to bump ponderously against a dock. Ratings' hands reached for him. They'd all be crushed.
Clear off! He shouted.
Engineer?
Came Hobbs' voice.
What's... Give me 1/20th G, Excel! Flash starboard for 1 second!
He screamed as the giant fist of metal closed upon him. He hoped his numbers, arrived at by pure instinct, were correct. He hoped Hobbs wouldn't ask what he was screaming about. In the time it took to say 10 words, he would be flattened. The huge vice closed on him. Without logic, Frick pressed against it, all his strength against 5,000 kilograms. He saw his crew's hands grip futilely at the metal's edges. The tons of hull alloy pressed relentlessly against him. A cracking sound came from Frick's chest, but then the slight bump of acceleration struck. The shielding's course fluidly reversed, as if some affectionate but massive metal creature had hugged him too tightly.
Thank you, Hobbs, he muttered.
The shielding moved away, only a hair faster than it had closed on Frick. Half a meter of space opened up, and hands, grabby gloved hands, he noted ruefully, reached underneath to pull him out. He took a deep, painful breath. Something popped in his chest. A few ribs had succumbed to the shielding's tight embrace, a small price to pay for an idiot's mistake.
Hobbs, he managed. What the devil's going on down there?
The shielding was still floating back toward the generator, slowly but still inexorably. They had to get it stopped.
Loose metal,
he said, measuring the shielding's speed with his engineers handheld and calculating.
One more acceleration. Opposite direction at 0.02 Gs.
Hobbs sighed with exasperation. She and the captain must be livid. They were supposed to be fleeing a Rick's warship at 18 Gs, not nudging around the links with tiny squirts of cold jet. But the bump came, Frick's grabby boots holding him firm, the metal edged to a near halt in midair. He smiled at his calculations. Not bad for an old man.
Hold in 0G, he said.
They couldn't resume acceleration with the heavy shielding floating about.
We have loose tons.
Loose tons?
Hobbs exclaimed.
Yes, ma'am,
Frick answered, holding his throbbing side.
Definitely tons.
All right, Frick, get that metal into the bow, she said. We'll be within range of the Rick's primaries in 400 seconds. And thanks to cutting our engines for you, we'll be at barely half a light second range. Damn, the first engineer thought. The loose shielding had cost them 2 minutes of acceleration. Damn those flockers. How had he missed the damage? He just hoped the armor would be worth the lost distance from the Rick's gravity cannon. Crew, we are going dark early, came the captain's voice. The old man didn't sound pleased. 10 seconds, Hobbs began the count. All right, Frick shouted to his crew. We're doing this in the dark. No second sight, no comm, no gravity. 5. Cut all the pieces out, but we'll be in microgravity once the cold jets start, he shouted. You and you, get this piece of tin moving toward the bow, and watch out. I happen to know it's heavy. A few of the crew laughed as they sprang to their work, but the boisterous sound dropped off as the ship went dark. The heads-up status displays, the hovering symbols that marked equipment, the chatter of ship noise and expert software, everything in second sight and hearing disappeared. The ship was left dim and lifeless around them, a mere hunk of metal. All they had to see by was unaugmented work lights, making the generator area a shadowy, red-tinged twilight zone. Then the cold jets started, pushing the Lynx to orient it bow first toward the Rick's battlecruiser. The microgravity shifted the loose plates of shielding again, but by now the crew had attached handholds and strong lines to them, and they soon had the beasts under control. But in the dim light and swaying microgravity, it felt like the below decks of some ancient warship on a pitching sea. Frick looked reflexively for a timestamp, but his second sight held nothing. The fields that created synesthesia were highly penetrative and persistent. The Ricks would be looking for them in their hunt for the Lynx. Second audio was out of the question as well. Only hardwired comm points were to be used. He'd gone over this with Hobbs, but it hadn't seemed real before now. Frick damned himself for not thinking to bring a mechanical chronometer. Had there even been time to fabricate such an exotic device? You, he said, pointing to a rating. Start counting. Counting, sir? Yes, counting out loud is your job now. Backwards from 380. Count slow, in seconds. A look of understanding crossed the rating's face. She started in a low voice. 380. 379. Frick shook his head at the sound. He was using a highly trained crewman as a clock, for God's sake. They would be running handwritten notes next. His angry eyes scanned the dimness of the generator area. Everywhere, huge and unwieldy pieces of metal were beginning to move with agonizing slowness. Each was supported by a web of strong lines. The cables were packed with stored kinetic energy, wind-up carbon that would contract when keyed. This purely mechanical motive force was invisible to the Rick's sensors, but it was capable of pulling the weightless, if massive, sections of hull alloy through the ship. Frick looked about for a rating with free hands. You, he called. Sir? Frick held up his bare hands. Get me some gloves. In 370 seconds or so, the Ricks might turn them all to jelly, but damned if Watson Frick was going to be crushed by some piece of dumb metal in the meantime. Executive Officer. Kathery Hobbs had never heard the battle bridge so silent. With the synesthesia field absent, most of the control surfaces had turned featureless grey. She seldom appreciated how few of the screens and controls she used every day were physical. It looked as if the frigate's bridge had been wrapped in grey, grabby carpeting, like some featureless prototype. The few hard icons that remained, the fat, dumb buttons that were independent of second sight, glowed dully in the red battle lights. The big air screen that normally dominated the bridge was replaced by its emergency backup, a flat screen that showed only one level of vision at a time, and fuzzily at that. Trapped in the dim world of primary sight, the bridge crew moved in a daze as if synesthesia were a shared dream they'd all just awoken from. Not that their confusion mattered. There wasn't much they could accomplish with the Lynx running in its near-total dark mode. The frigate's pilot staff were handling the cold jets, nudging the ship through a very slow arc, 90 degrees in 8 minutes, to keep the bow directly lined up on the Rick's battlecruiser. The Lynx was like a duelist turned sideways, keeping the smallest possible area oriented toward her opponent. The pilots spoke animatedly among themselves, out of Hobbs's hearing. The executive officer instinctively made the control gesture that should have fed their voices to her, But of course, second hearing was gone as well. Hobbs knew why they were frustrated, however. For their calculations, the pilots were using a shielded dark mode computer hidden behind the sick bay armor. The machine had about as much processor power as a robotic pet. At this range, the Rick sensors were very sensitive. Only the most primitive electronics could be used. Hobbs turned her mind to Frick's engineering team. They should have the impromptu armor plating in position by now. She rotated an unwieldy select dial at her station, trying to find the team. The usual wash of sound from below decks had been reduced to a smattering of voices. The only dialogue that reached Hobbs came through the hardwired comm points at key control points on the ship. The low-wattage handheld communicators they'd broken out were to be used only on the captain's orders. At this range, Rick's sensors could detect the emissions of a self-microwaving food pack boiling noodles. Even medical endoframes had to be shut down. Captain Zai's prosthetics were frozen. He couldn't budge from the shipmaster's chair. Only one of his arms was moving. The other was locked in a position that seemed painfully posed. "How are they doing, Hobbs?" the captain asked. His voice seemed so soft, so human now, absent the usual amplification of the captain's direct channel. Hobbs continued to scroll through the various comm points on the ship. The primitive interface was maddening. 10 awful seconds later, she was forced to admit, "I don't know, sir." Hobbs wondered if she had ever said those words to her captain before. "Don't worry, Hobbs," he said, smiling at her. "They're probably between comm points. Just let me know when they call." "Yes, sir." Despite losing his legs and one arm, the captain seemed hardly bothered by the blindness of dark mode. Zai was actually working with a stylus. On paper, Hobbs realized. He noticed her gaze upon the ancient apparatus. "We may need to use runners before this is over, Hobbs," he explained. "Just thought I'd practice my penmanship." "I'm not sure I know that last word, sir," she admitted. He smiled again. "On Vader, you couldn't graduate from upper school without good handwriting, Hobbs. The ancient arts always come back eventually." She nodded, recognizing the ancient root word, penmanship. It made sense now. As always, the Vaden emphasis was on the male gender. "But perhaps old ways aren't a priority on utopian worlds, eh, Hobbs?"
"I suppose not, sir," she said, feeling a bit odd that the captain was conversing with her only moments before the links would come under fire. In dark mode, of course, there was not much they could do other than chat.
"But in lower school I did learn how to use a sextant."
"An excellent skill," the captain said. He wasn't kidding.
"Though it was hardly a requirement for graduation, sir."
"I just hope you remember how, Hobbs. If the Ricks hit our processor core again, we may need you at the hard viewpoints."
"Let's hope it doesn't come to that, sir."
20 seconds,
announced a young ensign, raising her voice to be heard across the bridge. Her eyes were fixed on a mechanical chronometer someone had dug up from stores. Captain Zai had also produced an ancient Vaden wristwatch from among his family heirlooms. He had examined the two timepieces, determined that they ran on springs, making them undetectable to the Ricks, and synchronized one to the other with a twist of a minuscule knob. As the ensign counted down to the point when the Ricks could begin firing, Captain Zai handed Hobbs the writing instrument and paper.
"Care to have a go?"
She held the stylus like a knife, but that didn't seem right. She tried it like a pointer.
"Turn it around and slip the business end between your index and middle fingers," the captain said quietly.
"Ah, like a fork almost," Hobbs replied.
5,
said the ensign.
4.
Hobbs made a few marks. There was a certain pleasure in the pen's incision of the paper. Unlike air drawing, the friction of pen against paper had a reassuring physicality. She sketched a diagram of the bridge. Not bad, but writing? She crossed 2 parallel lines to make a crude H, then formed a circle for the O.
0, said the ensign. "We are in range of the enemy prime's capital weapons."
Hobbs tried the other letters of her name, but they dissolved into scribbles. The chief sensor officer leaned over a heads-down display, spoke in a loud, clear voice, as if addressing an audience from a theatrical stage.
"She's firing! Standard photon cannon! Looks to be targeting along our last known vector!"
Hobbs nodded. The Ricks would have tracked the links until 450 seconds ago, when they dropped into dark mode. But the coal jets had pushed the links onto a new vector. The captain had taken a risk with that. The cold jets used waste